It did not surprise many people when Tim George rose to the position of Medford Police Chief 4 years ago. He had long been one of the chief spokespeople for the department and one of its most recognizable faces. It was rare for a major crime to hit the news without a comment from Tim George as the voice of the Medford Police. When he became chief, he'd already been with the department for more than 3 decades, and now he says it's time to go. December 1st, Tim George moves from Medford Police Chief to retirement. We'll spend this hour talking about the transition, all that led up to it, and lots of things related to policing. Tim George, good to have you here in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So why are you leaving now?
Well, a couple of things. Probably 50% of it's PERS because there's some changes in the PERS system that are going to affect me forever. A reduction in the assumed rate and also a change in the mortality table. So probably half of it is the PERS situation. The other half of it it's been a long time for me in grade, and I wasn't planning on working past my 60th birthday, so that's coming up in a couple of months. And the PERS thing probably preempted it by about 6 to 9 months, but
advanced it, but not by a whole lot,
just because I'm old.
You don't look it. So you would make a lot less money in retirement if you hung out a little longer.
Well, it would just cause me to have to work longer to make it up, basically, just because of the changes that are taking effect. And I suspect there might be some more tightening of the PERS belt downstream just because of the cost of living lawsuit that they lost as well here a while back. So there's just a lot of things that are on the horizon for PERS that I'm unsure of. And When you make the decision to retire at this state in my life, you never get another promotion. You never get another pay raise. You basically get a cost of living increase, and that's it. So it's really a long-term plan that you got to look out for. And I have decided to look out for number one here and make that decision. But overall, it's no one has worked at MPD longer than me in the history of MPD. So it's not like this was a quick decision. It was a decision that took a lot of thought, and I'm leaving it with some bittersweetness just because I like being a cop. I like being part of a team. I like working at MPD. Medford's been a great place for me. Raised a family here, made a living here, did a lot of things here, and it's a great community to be in and be around. So it's not without reservation, that's for sure.
It'll be 39 years on the force when you're done, is it right?
I'll be in the middle of my 39th year, yeah.
Uh-huh. And how much more does that compare to the longest tenure before you?
I think it's around 35-ish, something like that historically. I'd have to talk to the MPD historians, but I haven't found or at least heard of anyone yet that's worked at that long. Nobody started when they were 12 like I did, so that was the issue. So.
Barely more than 12. You were actually 21 years old. So
I did. I left the halls of Central Hall here and moved north to MPD. I was almost a senior here. I came back and finished here after mm-hmm. I was off my probation, but I am I'm a graduate of this institution right here.
Southern Oregon University. We're sitting in the basement of Central Hall, and most of the law enforcement stuff is a building over in Taylor Hall.
I spent some time in Taylor. I had spent some time in here in English comp, and some other stuff was in here. I struggled in this building.
I'm glad you were not so reluctant to come back then. So age 21, I mean, did you think that you were going to, did you have bold designs of being the police chief in San Francisco someday?
I wasn't even going to stay here. My goal was to work in Medford for a couple of years, get certified, get all the stuff behind me with DPSST and all the stuff that you have to do to be a certified cop, and then laterally move back to Portland. That's where I was born and raised. I was going to be a Portland Police Bureau officer. That was my goal originally, but Medford got to be too good of a place and too nice of a place, and I was treated well there, and I had good experiences there, and I stayed there. But that was never the game plan. I was going to go be a big city cop, and then I can still remember us taking pictures of the population sign out by Blackbird when it moved up to, I want to say, either from 20,000 maybe it was when it finally moved to 30,000, I think, because they were working in a big city when it hit 30,000 or something like that. But now you look at it, I think we're close to 80,000 people, and we used to hunt pheasants where Costco sits, so there's been a lot of changes over the years.
Yeah, you and I could get into the old-timer stories, like, I remember when there were houses on Biddle Road where that kind of thing. So
say you're one of the founders of KDRV, for God's sake.
That's right. It goes back 30 years for me, too. So Tim George is the Medford Police Chief. He's retiring on December 1st, so just got a couple of weeks left. You can join us here in the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about his own particular journey and policing a little more generally. 800-838-3760, the phone number, the email address, jx@jeffnet.org. We got a call from Bill in Medford. I think you'll recognize the voice. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange, Bill.
Yeah, good morning, Jeff, and good morning, Tim.
I do recognize the voice.
Yeah, I'm a little angry at you for leaving us. I just wanted to mention that for as long as I've been here, 50 years or over, the city of Medford has just been blessed with all kinds of good administrators, and Tim is just a good example of that.
Well, thank you, Bill. You have been a mentor to me, that's for sure.
Well, I don't know about that, but Tim has had good judgment and, of course, technically knows what he's doing. And it's just I don't always agree with the police department, especially when I get a ticket. But I think Tim has led us very well.
Thank you.
So was the mentorship from when Bill was on city council?
Well, that and he also sits on our police advisory commission. And I enjoy listening to Bill, even if I don't agree with his side of the argument. Just I want to hear his argument because he is a... He's a perfect gentleman, number one, and number two, he's a scholar. He really is, and he understands government. He understands the business. He understands the imperfection of it, and the give and take that has to occur. I will miss Bill Mansfield, no question about it.
Well, a lot of things I'll bet you miss him. If you're going to be sticking around the area,
I will. For my wife is a lifelong educator. She's a graduate of the school also at SOU, and she's a teacher, so she's still working. I married a younger woman, so she's not eligible to retire yet, so we'll see where that goes. But eventually, when we're both retired, we're going to reach over and turn on the fun light, because combined public service between the two of us, probably 63 years, something like that.
It's getting up there. It would have to be by now, yeah.
So it's a lot of... That's a lot of see you later at 7:30 a.m. and say hello to you at 7:30 p.m. So we've been in the grind for a while.
That's true. You guys both would work relatively long days at your jobs.
Yeah.
So let's talk more general police type things, because right after I was finished coming up with a list of questions for you on Friday was when we heard about the terrorist attacks in Paris.
Yeah, horrible.
And
horrible.
So this is something that I know you don't deal with a lot directly in Medford, but since you talk to people at all up and down levels in the law enforcement business, I just wonder what's some general thoughts you might have about the challenges of policing in this age of terrorist threats.
9/11 still sticks in me because all airplanes were grounded in this country at 9/11. We had airplanes on the ground in Medford, and that's when we started the security detail at the Medford airport and went through a couple of contracts with that. Certainly air travel changed after that, and security as a whole across this country continues to change. I've been to Europe a couple of times, and it's certainly different in Europe than it is in the United States when it comes to security measures. I mean, just the train traffic alone, the pedestrian train traffic, and how many folks are on those trains, and how there's little screening and a lot of stuff that's going on there, and their border situations. It's difficult to tell when you're one country to another, and the influx of folks. It's very difficult, I think, for European law enforcement to get a handle on that. But the intelligence network across this country and across the world, for that matter, really has their hands full at this point because of the variety of threats, number one, and number two, the inability to control the movement of that across a whole bunch of different venues.
You end up getting confronted with a situation both as police and as a society where if you do want greater security, you're going to have to put some limits on people's movement. I mean, you can't have an open society if you want to be able to check everybody all the time, and that's not the kind of society we're talking about.
Right. There's going to have to be I wish Bill Mansfield was back on the phone because he's going to have to talk about that, and so is the rest of this country, about that debate on the there's going to be some sacrifice in civil liberties in order to benefit the safety of everyone else. I mean, that's going to have to happen just because of the threat and where the threat is and the accessibility that threat has to everyone in their common ordinary life. It's going to be a huge task. I think the United States is better geared for it right now just because of unfortunate things that have happened to us previously. I think we're much tighter now. Obviously, air flight travel is much different now, much safer. I think that's going to span across to other forms of travel, and I think there's going to be more work to be done. There's really no such thing as bad information in the intelligence world. It's some information is better than others, and there's a ton of work going on right now. I can't imagine what's going on the East Coast in this country, and I can't imagine what's going on and what this country is doing to assist France right now in the intelligence world alone, just to try and get a get a handle on where this is at and where this may go.
Well, the East Coast reference is well-founded because we were just made aware this morning that that there were specific threats about Washington being perhaps next on the list. Whether or not this is in fact from the same people who attacked Paris is still not determined at the last time I read this, but it certainly puts police agencies on alert. What kinds of things can you look for when something like this happens?
Well, there's a whole science behind the threat level and the reliability of that threat and the legitimacy of that threat. But large gatherings of people, regardless of where that's at, seems to be right now where this is going, just because of the ability to inflict more harm, to make a bigger splash, to make a bigger statement against this country by folks that have it bad for us, so to speak. So there's a lot that goes into this, but really it appears as though, at least at this point, and I'm certainly no expert, that the threat comes from the outside coming in. And that's really, I think, where this country's going to have to control that as far as international travel and folks that are sympathetic to that cause traveling to that country and that country traveling back to us. I think that's where the biggest effort's going to have to be made and the biggest concentration of intelligence networks is going to have to concentrate on.
Over the years in Medford, things like terrorism aside, I mean, what have been some of the biggest regular challenges in trying to maintain law and order on the streets of this town?
Well, I don't think Medford's any different than any other jurisdiction in Oregon or for the West Coast region, for that matter. Methamphetamine has, by far in my career, destroyed more people, destroyed more families, destroyed more lives, destroyed more communities than anything that I could ever have imagined. And the methamphetamine epidemic right now, and it is an epidemic. It is outrageous, the amount of methamphetamine that's in this community. You cannot go to a shoplift. You can't go to an assault. You can't go to a disturbance call. You can't go anywheres in this valley and not run into methamphetamine on a regular basis. It is outrageous, and it continues to be imported into this country from our southwest borders at an alarming rate, and there hasn't been a whole lot of disruption in that importation. We have seen some good things with the restriction of precursor chemicals and the fact that, you know, the meth labs and the environmental impact of those things have really fallen off of Oregon, and some other states have done a good job with that. But we continue to do business with countries that continue to flood this country with outrageous amounts of a drug that has a huge addiction factor and that really drives crime. It drives most criminal acts that are occurring. I mean, there's some things you can't control in the relationship business that we're in. I mean, you're going to have relationship issues and you're going to have some mental health issues and you're going to have other things that are going to pop up. But the average run-of-the-mill theft, burglary, some robbery, some assaulted behavior, even a lot of the gang influences based on the methamphetamine trade and the profit that can be made from drug trafficking organizations that push that.
Tim George is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Medford Police Chief departing on December 1st. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Tim about what's gone on this far in 39 years of police work in Medford and what lies ahead for him. 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You mentioned the precursor chemicals. I do remember, in fact, I think one of the first times I ever met you was on a bust of a meth lab at a small house on 4th Street in Medford, and it seemed like there have been jillions since that time. And I remember the smell of nail polish remover, the acetone that was the base for the methamphetamine then. That's been taken out of the market. You've had so much restriction on ephedrine and Sudafed and
absolutely
all the other things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can't remember last time we saw a methamphetamine lab. It's been years, and even the ones you see are in the most recent history were just remnants or something in a box that was maybe something in a car. So really, it's not profitable for those folks to even try and make it here. That it's, I mean, drugs like anything else, when the price is low, that's a terrible sign. And right now, methamphetamine is not expensive, which means this market is flooded with it. And I don't care where you go, up and down the West Coast, you can look at community after community that has absolutely been ravaged by methamphetamine addiction. And when you talk, and I've talked to a lot of methamphetamine addicts over the years and been around this for a long, long time, the power, the euphoria of that drug, and the fact that if you use it once or twice and become addicted to it is really overpowering. And it's really, you're looking at something that took off at a an alarming rate, and what happened was is that the availability changed. Now it's constantly being imported, and it's coming into this country and into this state and into this region in every conveyance that you could imagine, from little old ladies carrying it in a suitcase on a Greyhound bus to it being stuffed inside of some other product to mask the smell. I mean, there's so much profit margin in it, and there's so much of it out there that there's no problem getting it, number one, and really it really is an epidemic, and there has to be a switch in this country, at least from where I sit. On we have urgent care clinics that pop up in strip malls all over the place. Urgent care because Jeff has strep throat, or Jeff has the stomach ache, or Jeff has something, so he's going to go to this strip mall, go to this urgent care clinic, and get treatment. We need to have urgent care for addiction, and we need to have urgent care for mental health, because those are the issues that really cause catastrophic endings. Not that your sore throat isn't important, and I'm sure that you're going to need that kind of medical treatment. When you're looking at what treatment can do, and there's success in treatment for drug addiction, but also on the mental health side, you have to be able to get immediate services for that, and that's really crucial to preventing some really catastrophic things from happening.
That's an ongoing issue for police work. I mean, aside from methamphetamine, just trying to deal with people with mental health issues.
And
we've talked to lots of police departments about this.
There's obviously connections there too. I mean, there's all generally in those situations where we're dealing with mental health issues that evolve into something terrible with weapons or with the suicide or attempted suicide. Generally, there's an intoxicant involved there too, and there's usually a mix there too. So those things are huge, and it is so much more cost effective to treat it early and to get ahead of that curve as it is to try and beat it on the backside. I'm still a big time believer in enforcement. I can't, you know, people say the war on drugs wasn't successful. My God, imagine what it was like if we didn't fight this battle. Imagine what it was like if we just waved the white flag and said, "Hey, knock yourself out." There's been huge value in what we do, and there's been huge value in everyone else in this whole system, from treatment and from the medical side and from the family side and from the community side. But that has to continue to move forward, and we have to do something about the southwest border of this country and the importation of the product to begin with, and the fact that they're dumping excess product on the market in those countries to actually produce that. I mean, it's outrageous, and we should do business with those countries that continue to poison our country and our people in it.
Tim George is the Medford Police Chief. Here's a call from Gene in Winston. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Wow, Winston.
Yes, hello. Well, maybe this is kind of a dumb question. I don't really know much about methamphetamine, but I was wondering, if it was legal and the profit motive were taken out of pushing it, well, then what would happen? And I also kind of wondered what you think about the legalization of marijuana now. And thank you very much.
All right, thanks for that, Gene.
I don't think there's any majesty in the legalization of more drug. I haven't seen that work. I haven't been shy about my opposition to the legalization of marijuana. I don't think the legalization has caused anything to change in this current environment with marijuana. There's still huge profit to be made here. It is a business that is ripe for corruption, and there's still plenty of folks out there making a lot of money and shielding that, and I don't think you're going to tax your way out of it either. But anyways, that marijuana is a whole different issue. The voters have spoken on it, and they want it legalized in certain amounts and certain conditions, so be it. We're the referees of the world, and we will referee that. My concern is, on the marijuana piece of it, is that you're asking OLCC to manage something that I don't think they fully understand or can manage at this point. So the grand experiment has yet to play out here. I'm not so sure that alcohol has been controlled as most people would imagine it to be controlled. I don't want to live next door to a liquor store, nor do I want to live next door to a dispensary. It doesn't mean that I'm opposed to having a drink of alcohol, nor am I opposed to the voter saying if they want to have access to recreational marijuana, so be it. But the control piece is big. I think it affects a lot of folks, and I think you see communities struggle with that right now. You're seeing the city of Medford struggle with it right now, and whether or not they're going to allow certain things or what we're going to bring to the voters, or were they going to allow to grow it indoors or outdoors? Or
oh, that's right. It still has to go through second reading, but the vote was 6-2 to ban all indoor and outdoor grows. It has not taken effect yet. But,
correct.
But I mean, how much does that complicate your job trying to enforce laws when you got state law saying one thing, local ordinance saying something somewhat different, and for that matter, you still have this completely illegal under federal law?
Sure. Sure. And again, that I think communities struggle with that right now, and you're seeing that all across the state. We'll go back to that same discussion about your rights and your responsibilities. How far does that extend? Yeah, you can grow marijuana outside because you have a medical marijuana card, but you can grow 6 adult plants, but can those plants infringe on your neighbor because of the odor or because of whatever else that brings with it? But again, most of that stuff is complaint-driven. It's not like I think there's a misconception out there that local police are going to be knocking on people's doors to see if they have marijuana growing inside their house. That is not going to happen. That hasn't been happening now because I really don't know what's going on behind people's doors unless there's a reason for me to be there. I may be there because of a complaint about odor. I may be there because of a complaint about traffic. I may be there because of a complaint about something totally unconnected, and then I run into that, and then I would deal with that. That would be more of an ordinance issue. It wouldn't be a crime. It would be someone
more of a code enforcement.
Right.
Kind of
it's
thing.
Like,
yeah.
Like a,
you know, whether your grass is too long or something.
Right. Well, your weeds are too high, or your music is too loud, or you have an accumulation of junk in your driveway, whatever it is. So I think there was some confusion about what that would be. That would be an ordinance violation as long as you weren't in violation of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act with having too much of this, or in violation of the Oregon law having too much of this or too much, or what you were doing with it because you still couldn't sell it or whatever. But I think that was a bit of a discussion that still hasn't completely played out yet. But again, you got a lot of communities that are struggling with that because of how it reflects, or how it. Well, what are the conditions, basically? I mean, how is it going to affect you? How is it going to affect neighborhoods? How is it going to affect the quality of life for folks that are concerned about that? So there's all sorts of restrictions there. But I do have some worries about this whole grand experiment with marijuana playing out. But obviously, methamphetamine and heroin have a much more high hazard potential, and those are things that we're dealing with on a regular basis that I think are a bit more important than that.
Got to take a break. Back with Tim George in a minute. Exchange 836 on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Garrison Keillor and the Writer's Almanac move to the back of the hour because we're going to continue our discussion with Tim George, who is the police chief in Medford and is retiring December 1st in the middle of his 39th year with the department. He says that's about 5 years more than the longest tenure of anybody else in the Medford Police. He's been chief since 2011, and you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about issues facing his and other police departments across the country. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Jeff in Roseburg. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Chief Tim George.
Hello. So what do you think of open borders and sanctuary cities?
Okay. So just in terms of people coming in and potentially causing problems and crimes and also making not enforcing immigration laws, too, in sanctuary cities.
Not enforcing immigration and some people getting in trouble for saying, let's close the border.
Okay, let's find out. Thanks for that, Jeff. Appreciate it. Based on what you said already, I'd say you would not be for open borders, Tim George.
No, I think the world's changed, and it hasn't changed for the better when it comes to border control, just because of what you're seeing across this country and across the world, for gosh sakes. I mean, as a local law enforcement officer, I'm not allowed to enforce immigration law. It's pretty specific, especially in Oregon, that's a job that is tasked by the federal government. That's what they do, and we can't do that. We provide law enforcement services to anyone that's here. If you're in the city of Medford or you're in the state of Oregon and you're a crime victim, then you get those kind of services, and you should. But there has to be a different way of looking at immigration, and there's, like I said, there's a huge intelligence piece to that. If you're talking about the safety and security of everybody else that's here, you can't have the situation where there's no restriction. And in fact, if anything, there's going to have to be more restriction because you have to be careful on who's coming in. As long as you process it correctly and as long as you control the influx and know who's coming and there's a process for people that come here. I mean, my daughter was in Germany for she's an optometry student, so she had to go to Germany, and she was based in a U.S. Army hospital in Germany for part of an internship for 90 days. And she had pretty strict instructions from the military there that when you get to the 89th day, you got to be packing up and leaving because you can only stay for this amount of time. And if you don't, you're going to be in trouble with the German government because you can't do this. All sorts of restrictions and all sorts of rules and regulations. And this is a graduate student that's there working on a U.S. military base.
You think she would be a low security risk.
Right. Yeah. Imagine the time, energy, and effort that's going on to people that aren't in that condition. So when you look at the controls that some other countries go to the extreme in order to regulate that, I think that, you know, America has been the melting pot of and come one, come all. But I think you got to look at that a little bit differently. And I don't understand the whole sanctuary city thought process here, because if you're in violation of federal immigration law, then you're in violation of federal immigration law, regardless of where you're at. If you're in the United States of America, then you fall under those rules and regulations that citizens of this country have to abide by.
Well, this must be an interesting time to be a person in policing, though, because you not only have sanctuary cities, you have the situation where you have sheriffs and sometimes county commissioners talking about not wanting to enforce new gun laws they think they're in violation of the Second Amendment. So a lot of nullification kinds of thoughts that they're right. Like, we're not going to enforce this law or that law.
And I'm in huge argument with those folks, because you don't get to pick and choose. I don't get to pick and choose what laws that I want to enforce or don't want to enforce. We are the referees of the world. When the laws get enacted, then those are the laws that we have to enforce. And I just can't decide, well, I'm not going to do that because I disagree with it. Good Lord. I mean, that's not how this country works. That's not how government works and not how democracy works. I don't get to do that. If you don't like the law, then change the law. If you don't like the certain circumstances, then you move towards legislation to try and fix that. You just don't get to decide, well, I don't like that, so I don't want to do that. Because you raised your right hand and you said that you're going to do this. You were going to support the Constitution. You were going to enforce federal, state, and local law, and you got sworn in as whatever position that you were in. I don't get that, and I totally disagree with that, and I think it's wrong, bottom line.
You mentioned methamphetamine being a huge part of what has happened to crime and law enforcement in the city of Medford. What about gangs? I mean, gangs have been talked about for years now. They certainly are more of a presence than they used to be. I know for a while there, you know, it seemed like you could just say gang-related and people go, ooh, my, you know, it's a big deal. But, you know, we've had to get more specific over time about what that means.
And there's actually a process for that, and DOJ has a process for that, and there's specific requirements for us to list someone as an associate or affiliate when it comes to gang enforcement and how we do that. But as populations increase, you're going to get a certain amount of that, especially where we were at along the I-5 corridor and in close proximity to the state of California, where you're going to have a more of a specific gang influence when it comes to both the Norteño and Sereno gang sects that we deal with here. I wouldn't say that it is a large problem, but we do have a specific group of individuals that do involve themselves in gang activity. And generally, you'll see that if there's been some type of assault that is gang connected or has a gang influence attached to it, there will be an effort for retribution. And we try and put as much energy and effort into that initial investigation when the first event happens to prevent that second piece from happening. And I don't know if you saw it in the news here just a couple of days ago, but we had some great help from our law enforcement friends down in Los Angeles County, who actually arrested Tyler Sandoval, who was the alleged shooter in a Narragan Street shooting that definitely was a gang-connected event and involved some rival gang activity. And so we put a lot of time and energy and effort into gang enforcement in the last 90 to 120 days based on some activity that we saw. And that activity involved firearms, and we got after it. And I think that effort has shown a calming effect and has also shown that we have absolute zero tolerance for any kind of gang violence, and we spend a lot of time and energy and effort on it. The other thing that we do that is, I think, sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, we have 6 employees that go to work in the Medford School District every day that are Medford PD employees. We have a cop at North Medford High School. We got a cop at South Medford High School. We got a cop at Hedrick Middle School. And we got a cop at McLaughlin. So you got 4 full-time cops that go to work every day in the Medford School District. Plus, we have 2 civilian employees that are assigned to those high schools for the code enforcement livability issues that surround that. So that relationship, there's not too many folks south of Eugene that would have that many people involved in school district activities. And that relationship that we build really is a huge preventative piece, because what you hear is what you can act on. And you have to be there to hear it. You have to develop a relationship with students and with faculty and with parents and everybody else involved in that school community to hear what's going on, to step in front. Very difficult to measure prevention. It's harder to prevention something that doesn't happen.
Right.
You just think, well, wow, God, nothing's happened. But actually, there's a lot of work that goes into the preventative piece that sometimes gets overlooked. And that's all those things that we're doing. We're at large functions. We're in the crowd gathering business. So we are at Spiegelberg Stadium. We are at basketball games. We are at dances. We are at homecoming, proms, whatever. We are there because, one, we should be there, and number two, that's a huge part of that communication piece, and really the relationship that we have with the Medford School District is something that is envied by others.
Tim George is the Medford Police Chief and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange for a few more minutes here. Talk about the use, you talk about relationships then, and just getting people to know you in the community. Talk about the use of Facebook and social media to keep an eye on crime in town.
There's not enough lens in this town for me and Mike Boudreau at the same time, I think so. But I'm sure Mike's listening right now, but because he listens to everything. But I will give Mike Boudreau all the credit for that. I think we're close to 19,000 followers on Facebook. I think we may be the second largest one law enforcement wise in the state. And a lot of that, again, it's effort. You have to manage it. You have to work it. You have to. Poor Mike can't go on vacation without posting from a hotspot at Lake of the Woods someplace, trying to get that thing out. Because he puts a lot of time, energy, and effort into it, and we do have a backup for him when he does have to get away from it for a little bit. But that communication piece and how people communicate and how they watch. I'll come home at night, and my wife will say, hey, what happened on that one particular case? And I'll go, what are you talking about? She saw it on Facebook, and so she's questioning me about an MPD case that I'm not that familiar with just because Mike's posted and she's read it and she wants to know what happened on that thing. And Mike has a large following. He has just enough humor to be acceptable, but you don't want to step over the edge on that because a lot of the stuff we do is very serious business. But he does make it somewhat humorous, and he makes it.
He's got the right tone for
right
social
tone
media.
For it, right. Yeah, mm-hmm. And people want to read it, and they're attracted to it, and that's a good thing because we've solved cases with it. I mean, it is, what it says on our cars. It is your police, our community. I mean, it really is. The police department is owned by the citizens of Medford. They're paying the freight for it, so they should be able to know what's going on, and they should be able to read about what's going on. They should be able to participate in it. And Mike's really done a good job with making that happen with Facebook and with any other way that we can communicate with folks from in person to on the phone to through the internet, through Facebook, through television, through radio, whatever means we can do it. We need to communicate with folks and tell them what's going on and why it's going on and again, develop that relationship because people will talk to us. And when people talk to us, good things happen.
With the rise of social media, though, you also have the rise of devices. Smartphones, cell phones, people, everybody's got a camera.
Everybody's
got a
camera.
And so you get in a situation where they've also come along at the time when you've got situations like in Ferguson going on. I mean,
sure.
How much impact does it have on a department like Medford, which is, you know, does have a minority population?
Sure. I think, unfortunately, there's been some sad things that have happened across this country that may have a poor reflection. Not that there couldn't have been any other way to resolve the Ferguson issue on that particular case. But unfortunately, there are things that now get publicized all across this country. They may happen in one location in this country that everybody hears within a very short period of time and makes a come to judgment decision on what happens. And unfortunately, sometimes that information isn't totally there yet, or they don't know the whole story on that yet. But we're fortunate that we live in a community that still supports public safety, and I'm not anti-camera at all. In fact, we're purchasing body-worn cameras, and we're going to put it on every cop in Medford that's out there patrolling the streets of the city because that's going to make us better.
They'll all have body cameras.
They'll have body cameras on. We already have dash cams in the front of those cars anyways, and so you're being filmed wherever you go. You go to the mall, you're on film. In certain areas of downtown Medford, businesses have have cameras out there. Like you said, everybody's got a cell phone out there. So when something's happening in the community, there's all sorts of people taking film of it. So I'm not anti-camera. I'm not anti-recording. That stuff is out there and it's available to it. And there's an expectation that we're going to do what we're supposed to do, and we should. 99% of the time we're doing the right thing. And those 1% of those times when we're not, then that is what I do. I police the police, and we should have that information, and we should try and correct that and try and get better and try and hold people accountable. It is public funds. It is a public agency, and it's owned by the citizens that are footing the bill, and they have an expectation that we're going to do the right thing for the right reason. And we do most of the time.
You mentioned that the people of Medford do support the police department,
they do.
And that is true. But you've had to watch as, for example, you got the county sheriff's office in Jackson County less impacted, but somewhat by the fact that county revenues have declined. Josephine County, big time. And so,
absolutely.
So, I mean, what is that like to be sitting in your island of relative financial calm while you're watching departments not far away deal with increases in crime because of decreases in officers?
Yeah, I sympathize with what's going on in Josephine County. I'm not so sure why those people in rural Josephine County keep voting no for law enforcement services. That's a whole separate issue and probably a whole other hour of conversation. But I'm fortunate to be in a community that supports that and funds that because I think it's important. It's what government does and what government should do. But it's sad to see what happens in rural areas where there isn't. And thank God for the state police, for God's sakes. I mean, state police end up picking up the tab here, and it's not fair. It's not fair that the citizens of rural Josephine County decided they don't want to pay for rural law enforcement. So you know who's paying for it? Me and you are paying for it because the state took 13 or 14 troopers and put them in Josephine County where they could have used them in other places for traffic enforcement to make highways safer, and they become a 911 answering service, a 911 law enforcement answering service as opposed to the county sheriff. So in essence, the highways and byways of Jackson and Josephine County are less safer because OSP has had to become the 911 answering point for those crimes in rural Josephine County that we're paying state taxes, so we're paying for it. And it's really unfair because if you're not going to pay for those services, why should there be this safety valve that's going to take care of it anyways without being charged for it? I don't understand that.
Were there things you wanted to do with Medford Police that you just feel like you ran out of time, you couldn't get them accomplished before your time was up?
Oh, I think everybody probably has things that they, when it's all said and done, that they probably wish they would have had a little more time to get accomplished. But I'm proud of the work that our folks have done. We just got reaccredited here for another 3-year accreditation, which was big. We just settled a 3-year contract, a labor agreement, which is big without going to mediation or arbitration. That's a good thing. We have a police building that's under construction and will be done in less than a year.
With some cost overruns.
We're back in it now. We did the value engineering. We're gonna be within budget. We're gonna resolve that. So, and I'm very proud of the council that made that decision to make that happen, because that when I got hired in 1977, they said, don't get too comfortable because you're only going to be in this building for a short period of time.
And you were cramped in the basement or in the first floor of City Hall then. And
oh, absolutely.
You're still there.
You're talking about 13,000, 14,000 square feet with roughly 160 folks into it. I mean, there were times when we interviewed people in our car in the parking lot. I've done that. I've talked to victims in cars. I've talked to suspects in cars. That was an absolute need. And I'm extremely proud of the council and the mayor and the folks that made that happen, and that's something that will make us better and make this community better for years to come. So those are really, some of the big ticket items, but the bottom line is that who we hire is probably the most important thing that we do, because the most important thing we have out there, our most precious resource, our most expensive resource, the people that are working for us and really providing essential services on a day-to-day basis with individual contact with folks. And so who you hire, how you train them, and the tone that you set for how you're going to do that is really the most important thing that I've tried to get across, is you can't spend enough money on doing backgrounds on people. Make sure you hire the right people that are going to make the right decisions so you don't have situations that erode public trust like you were talking about earlier, because this is a trust business. You trust in us to do things, and we better do them correctly, and you got to have the right people with the right moral compass and the right set of ethics in order to get that job done.
About a minute left here. You have run for office before. You ran for sheriff
years
ago. Is there any thought about political future ahead of you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. God, I'd run from that. That's the hardest thing I ever did in my life, because I was doing a full-time job, And then after hours, I was running for sheriff, and I was spent when that was done. It took me some while to recover from that, both physically and mentally, because that those were 16-hour days for about, sometimes 18-hour days for about 6 months. And that was, I mean, my kids got to see that process live from the kitchen table, and had some good friends that helped me with that, and we gave it a good shot, but somebody upstairs was looking out for me, that's for sure, because okay. I ended up in a better place.
All right, so that's a never again. I'm running for office. Tim George, the outgoing chief of the Medford Police, done on December 1st. Tim, thanks so much for taking the time
to join us. Thank you. Thanks for having me.